Hello, I'm Connie, Representative Connie Bernardi, and I welcome you to the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the role.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen. Vice Chair Christensen. Representative O'Neill.
Present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard. Representative Howard. Representative Keeler.
Present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, present.
Cleavorn, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Krisha. Representative Krisha. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland. Representative Meckland. Representative Noor.
Present.
Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. And Sandsted, present. Representative Krisha. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Christensen. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Present.
Meckland, present. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And now I have a motion to approve the minutes of February 16th, 2021.
So moved.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes for February 16th, 2021. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 16th, 2021 are approved. Today we have a presentation from the Office of Higher Education. They will be giving us an overview of the governor's budget recommendations. As with our hearing yesterday, we will we'll have two presenters, and we'll be going through the whole presentation today. So please jot your questions down, and I will call on you in the order in which you raised your hands. With us today, we are starting with Commissioner Dennis Olson, and then we will be having Nikki Oliver, the Grants and Government Relations Manager. And I should have said when I mentioned Dennis Olson's name, he's the Commissioner of the Higher Education. Welcome to our committee today. And Commissioner Olson, you may proceed.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to outline the higher education portion of the governor's COVID-19 recovery budget this afternoon. As you're all well aware, it's been an unprecedented year, which many areas of our state have been affected and impacted in multiple ways. And you've heard from the systems, our public systems, as well as private college council on, you know, how they've had to make difficult and tough decisions in response to the pandemic. And issues regarding student enrollment. And, you know, the governor has had to do the same. But within those decisions, he realizes that that COVID and the impacts have not affected everyone in our state the same. And so the governor's budget seeks to respond in a way that provides needed support to those that have been most significantly impacted as a means to help our state recover while also building for the future. Thus, the administration has prioritized supporting small businesses, driving economic recovery, and ensuring students catch up on learning, as well as supporting working families. Items that I'll go through this afternoon will touch on all three of those priorities. To help Minnesota students and post-secondary institutions recover and move forward from the COVID-19 pandemic, Governor Walz's higher education proposal provides increased investments. It strengthens and expands existing programs, as well as creating new initiatives that will help more Minnesotans access and complete a post-secondary education to contribute to the state's workforce needs now and in the future. With that, Madam Chair, I'll jump right in. And the first theme of the governor's budget for higher education is to recover and build for the future. And there's three key investments in this area, and I'll talk through them in more detail in a minute. But the first is a $35 million investment for workforce and reskilling grants. The governor is also recommending a $1.3 million investment for student emergencies, as well as a $2.43 million investment for secondary student learning and college preparation. So first and foremost, I mentioned the $35 million investment for workforce reskilling. The governor is proposing investing $35 million to provide affordable access to our public colleges, our public universities, and our tribal colleges in Minnesota for workers that have been impacted by COVID-19, as well as for low-income students that have also been impacted by the pandemic or whose education has been disrupted by the pandemic. This program provides two pathways for Minnesotans to be eligible to receive the grants. First, for displaced workers with incomes up to $80,000, they can access the Workforce Stabilization Grant Program, as well as students with incomes up to $50,000. This particular new program has a focus on high-need occupations, and this program will also support Minnesota's economic vitality and support Minnesota's economic recovery. This is a last-dollar grant program, so essentially taking into account all federal, state resources. The grant program will cover tuition and fees at public colleges, universities, and tribal colleges up to those income thresholds. And estimates based on the $35 million investment support upwards of and over 20,000 Minnesotans. The next investment the governor is recommending is a $1.3 million investment into the Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students Grant Program. We note in the first bullet that COVID-19 has really exacerbated all of the temporary financial hardships that our students have endured, not only through pre-COVID times, but especially during impacts of COVID. And we know our Minnesota college students continue to face issues around housing insecurity and food insecurity that ultimately impact their ability to stay in school and persist and ultimately complete. So the governor's investing additional funds that'll help more Minnesota students weather these hardships so they can continue their education. And finally, within this this area of investment, the governor is also recommending an investment of $2.43 million over the biennium to support two programs currently currently administered and overseen in the Office of Higher Education that are designed to address educational challenges caused by the pandemic. Both programs, first the Summer Academic Enrichment Program, as well as the Intervention for College Attendance Program, target low-income students and help them catch up from an even more challenging school year. This additional funding proposed by the governor will increase the number of students served, as well as expand program options for students looking to access these programs. These programs are rigorous learning programs steeped in rigorous learning opportunities, and the additional investment will help hundreds of students improve their academic skills and prepare them to continue their education after high school, as well as plan for college. The governor also has some investments in continued support for Minnesota students. The governor's proposing a $6.3 million investment for the Minnesota State Grant Program. Governor is also proposing a $1 million new investment for a proactive or direct admissions program. And the governor is finally proposing a $5.4 million investment in the Teacher Candidate Grant Program. And I'll go through those in a little bit more detail here. So first, the governor is proposing an additional $6.3 million in the Minnesota State Grant Program. And this additional investment provides both larger grants to students as well as more money for living expenses. This new investment is dedicated to maintaining the current percentage of living and miscellaneous expenses for students, which is currently set at 110% of poverty. And this is to help students address, again, the growing food and housing insecurity needs that have been exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to the investment, the governor is also making a policy recommendation to propose exempting developmental education credits that are currently being counted towards state grant eligibility totals. So the governor is looking at exempting courses that do not count towards graduation, meaning that students will maintain their state grant eligibility for longer. We know right now that students can access the Minnesota State Grant Program for up to 120 credits of support. And the Federal Pell Grant Program actually has 150 credits of support. And so we're looking at a way for students to continue their eligibility without having those developmental education credits count against them. And then finally, the governor is also recommending a $5.4 million investment in the Teacher Candidate Grant Program. We know there are deep shortages in the teacher workforce, particularly teachers of color and American Indian Indigenous teachers. According to Pelsby Supply and Demand Report, teachers of color and Indigenous teachers only represent 5.64% of all licenses held in the state. And we know they're drastically underrepresented compared to the overall percentage of students of color and Indigenous students in the state. The additional $5.4 million investment will support more teacher candidates, specifically with a focus on teachers of color, American Indian teachers, as well as a specific focus on teachers in Greater Minnesota. And then the governor is also recommending $1 million over the biennium to support a new initiative, which supports college going through a proactive admissions process for Minnesota public high school students entering their senior year of high school. This will be a new partnership between K-12 and higher education, and it greatly has the potential to reduce equity gaps, as well as provide important college going information and signals to high school students that they have the ability and have met the threshold to be admitted into our public colleges in Minnesota. This program has the opportunity to alleviate potential access gaps for both rural and urban populations, as well as really alleviate the need for extensive college going knowledge to navigate the college application process. As an example of this, and we can talk through it later if there are questions, the state of Idaho implemented a direct admissions program in, I believe, 2016, and they've seen an 88% increase in college applications, as well as an overall increase of college enrollment of 6.7% in immediate enrollment, and a 3.1% increase in overall college enrollment, as well as less students leaving the state. And so we estimate with this investment and initial partnership, similar percentages like this for Minnesota would equate to around 4,000 more Minnesota high school graduates enrolling in college in the fall after high school. This is a pilot. It is a proposal that is loaded in the first year of the biennium to set up the partnership, but the ongoing appropriation is actually quite small, I believe $75,000 of ongoing for the partnership. So this $1 million really sets up the pilot program and with a small investment for ongoing. And then, Madam Chair, there also is some additional policy provisions in the governor's budget recommendations, and I'll go through those now briefly. The first one is that the governor is recommending some simplification and changes to the Minnesota Post-Secondary Child Care Grant Program. This proposal simplifies the grant award formula, essentially allowing more students with children to have access to the funding for child care grants, again, helping them stay in school and focus on their studies. And this is an issue that we have also seen exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, and we know how critical child care and access to quality child care is for our students to be able to continue and persist. The governor is also recommending some improvements to the dual training grants. The recommended modifications to the grant criteria will help our office, as well as the Department of Labor and Industry, improve the selection process of grantees, ultimately resulting in better quality dual training programs that are selected for receipt of the grants. And then finally, in policy proposals, the governor is recommending two changes to the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program. The first is an expanded ancestry eligibility provision. Historically, the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program has relied solely on a one-quarter blood quantum threshold for eligibility. And the governor is recommending that we also include in the language students who are citizens or enrolled members of tribal nations to be eligible for the grants as well. And then finally, to be consistent with all other state financial aid programs in the state, governor's recommending providing full year awards to eligible students who are enrolled in either three consecutive semesters, meaning fall, spring, and summer, or for those that are still on the quarter system, fall, spring, as well as, fall, spring, summer for the quarter system as well. And then, Madam Chair, the governor is also recommending some realignment of current programs that the office oversees and administers. And so the first that the governor is looking or proposing to leverage and change is to increase additional support to organizations, teachers, and students. And the first way is to expand the concurrent enrollment grant program to allow the existing funds to also be utilized for teacher professional development and student recruitment initiatives. So essentially opening up the eligibility of the program a little bit. And then the second realignment piece is to convert a current $2 million direct appropriation, which goes to one organization, into a competitive grant program that'll provide funding to multiple nonprofit organizations and school districts and advocacy organizations, specifically those that support students living with autism for preparation for life after high school. And then, Madam Chair, I also want to outline the governor's recommendations for our public systems. The governor's recommending $46.5 million in operations and maintenance support for the University of Minnesota, as well as a total of $63.5 million for the Minnesota State System. And I'll go through those in a little bit more detail here. So the first for the University of Minnesota, the governor is recommending, like I said, $46.5 million to the university's O&M general fund appropriation, again, to allow the university to retain their world-class faculty and employees, to manage that quality facility and classroom environment, to ensure regulatory compliance, as well as to strategically invest in targeted program enhancements that have been outlined by President Gable and university leaders. The governor, like I had mentioned, is also recommending a total of $63.5 million for the Minnesota State College and University System. Of that investment, $61 million is recommended over the biennium for campus responsiveness and stabilization, the operations and maintenance, a piece of MinState's overall request. This proposal really provides campuses with the operating funds needed to continue to offer high quality, affordable education programs throughout the state. And then in addition to that $61 million investment, governor's recommending $2.5 million over the biennium for the equity and affordability provisions of Minnesota State's budget proposal. This is an opportunity to support their online mental health resources for students, as well as an information hub to connect students to other state and local resources that provide critical needs for students, such as housing and, again, food insecurity. And then, Madam Chair and members, finally, the budget, or the governor is also recommending a couple of difficult budget reductions as well for the Office of Higher Education and the programs that we oversee and administer. And I'll go through those briefly. First of all, the total budget reduction recommendation from the governor is $12.2 million for the biennium. And the reductions will come first from the dual training grant transfer. It is an appropriation transfer from the Office of Higher Education to the Department of Labor and Industry, and that is $400,000 over the biennium. The governor is also recommending a reduction in the interstate tuition reciprocity appropriation of $5.036 million over the biennium. The governor is also recommending a reduction in the large animal veterinarian loan forgiveness program of $750,000 over the biennium. And then finally, Madam Chair and members, the governor is also recommending a reduction of the spinal cord and traumatic brain injury grant program with a total of $6 million. And with that, Madam Chair and members, I know there would be plenty of questions. And so at this time, I just thank you for your opportunity to, or for the opportunity to address the committee today, and look forward to the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. We do have members that have questions. We have Representative Erickson with Representative O'Neill on deck. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, would you explain the reasons for the budget reductions? I'm a little surprised at the spinal cord and traumatic brain injury grants. Is that research exhausted, or is there some other reason? The same with the veterinary forgiveness and the reciprocity and the other item too. Would you explain his rationale for those reductions?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. Yeah, I appreciate your questions there. And you're absolutely right. These are difficult reductions to entertain. Unfortunately, all state agencies have to propose some reductions in order for the governor to have the ability to make some investments. First, to your first question around the spinal cord traumatic brain injury research grant program, to the best of my knowledge, that research is not exhausted. We know how critically important that research is. We've had a lot of success with the program. And unfortunately, you know, it is not 100% mission aligned to our agency. We're hopeful to be able to work with the committee as well as with other stakeholders to find a more appropriate home for that research grant. Our mission overall is to, you know, ensure the receipt of a credential, a post-secondary credential by every Minnesotan, and we don't have the internal expertise to oversee a medical research program. And so, you know, we're hopeful that the program can find a place either with one of our universities or one of our health systems that help to conduct and facilitate the research. And then Representative Erickson, my apologies, the next was tuition reciprocity.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Olson, just all four of them. All four okay. of the reductions.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson. Yeah, so same thing with the large animal veterinary program. We know, again, a critical need. We know that we've had success with the program. The program was originally with the Minnesota Department of Health. And my understanding is that Department of Health didn't have the capacity to oversee and administer the grant, which is how it ended up at our agency. Certainly happy to have it, but again, not 100% mission aligned. And again, are hopeful that we can find an appropriate home for the Vet Loan Forgiveness Program, but you know, do recognize the important work that's been accomplished. For the Interstate Tuition Reciprocity Program, the current appropriation for the biennium is about $11 million, just a hair over $11 million. The obligation to North Dakota over the past few academic years has been around $8.5 million. And we don't foresee the appropriation or the obligation increasing anytime soon. And so the ability to have a $5 million reduction there still aligns the program with our current obligation in North Dakota without impacting that payment at all. And then finally, the dual training grant program transferred to DLI, again, finding a more appropriate home for those funds, but it does not take away our involvement in the program to award grants.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Olson, I just want to say DLI, Department of Labor and Industry, I'm assuming that you were referring to. Thank you.
Yes.
Representative O'Neill and then Representative Howard is on deck. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go back to the dual training grants because I actually wrote that bill. And that was a bipartisan bill. It was Terry Bonoff, Senator Bonoff over in the Senate, and I was the chief author over here. And that was when I was vice chair last time in the higher ed committee. And so are you saying that are you just reducing the 400,000 of the dual training grants, or are you eliminating that funding? Because you're saying it doesn't align with OHE. So what exactly are you doing with the money? Or are you eliminating that completely? Because earlier you said you were changing the selection process for the dual training program. So I'd like to know exactly what it is you're changing and are you just reducing the 400,000? Are you shifting it to Dolly? What exactly are you doing?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. No, there is no reduction in the appropriation. This will just be a shift in the appropriation from OHE to Dolly for the program. And Madam Chair, if I may, I do see Ms. Oliver's hand up and she may have more information here that she could lend.
Ms. Oliver.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Hi, once again, for the record, my name is Nikki Oliver and I'm the Manager of Grants and Government Relations for the Office of Higher Education. And I also was around when Representative O'Neill and former Senator Terry Bonoff produce this program. So like the commissioner stated, the funds are just being transferred to DLI. It's just eliminating that extra step for us to just transfer the funds over to them. So the hopes is that it gets appropriated into their budget. It is in their budget request for that to happen. As far as the actual changes to the dual training grants, the administrators of the program in consultation with the Department of Labor and Industry. One of the change that is being made is that there was a automatic, essentially priority or automatic acceptance of any program that were employing or possibly employing recent high school graduates. So we're taking that away as an automatic, you get the grant, because we've seen there's been some programs that would technically be considered lower quality receiving the grants over more high quality, high programs that are more sought after. So we're not taking away that piece exactly. We're just taking away from allowing those organizations to get immediately receive the grant. We're just adding that recent high school graduate piece to the priorities or the scoring of it. So it's still there. It's just not going to make those applicants, aka employers, automatically be able to receive the grant, so we can make sure that we're getting the highest quality organizations participating and receiving the grant. Sorry, Madam Chair, there was one more thing I wanted to note, and it was regarding some of the reductions. I do want to note that we will still be retaining the special revenue accounts for those programs. So for the spinal cord traumatic brain injuries, for programs that we have that have existing contracts, so they'll still be allowed to receive their funding until the research is done. Same thing with the large animal vet recipients of that loan repayment will still be able to receive their full 5 years of repayment because we will retain the special revenue account that houses the funds for them. Thank you.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you. I actually have several questions. Thank you. That was just the first. Okay, so it's not really a reduction. It's more of a shift. Okay, just want to make sure. All right. Then you're creating a new program, the direct admissions program. It sounds an awful lot like what we already have with PSCO. So it kind of seems like we're making a parallel programming for kids that are already seniors in high school or about to be a senior. So can you explain why are we creating something that already exists? Why are we doing the strict admissions as opposed to just doing PSCO?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. This is not a concurrent enrollment option or a dual credit option. This is actually a program where a graduating high school senior would receive a letter indicating that they have been admitted into open access institutions, so all of our MnState two-year colleges, and then students who surpass a pre-identified threshold, whether that's based on GPA or ACT, SAT, or a combination of class rank or others, could also be automatically admitted into selective institutions. And so, you know, we know that immediately this will work most seamlessly with our open access institutions, our two-year MnState colleges, as well as a majority of the state universities. But we do know that some specific programs and colleges within the state universities may have a little bit higher admit threshold. But that's what the pilot will be for, to work with K-12 schools, as well as our colleges and universities, including our private institutions, to be able to establish those thresholds. And so we're basically just signaling to all of our graduating Minnesota seniors that we want them to take advantage of higher education options in Minnesota. We have a spot for them and we're ready for them.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Okay, so thank you for that clarification. You made it sound like they were in their senior year and then they were going to be attending. So it was like the PSEO program. So, I mean, we're already doing that in the state of Minnesota. It's if you graduate from high school in Minnesota, you already can enroll. You can apply and enroll in a two-year college. So we're spending $1 million to tell kids that you can already do this, or I'm not quite sure what the point of it is. Anyway, moving on. You had said that you're taking $2 million that were a direct appropriation grant for a particular organization and making it a competitive grant process, but you didn't say which organization. Can you tell me which organization that you're no longer going to be doing a direct appropriation to and instead doing competitive grant?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. It is the Minnesota Independence Community and College, MICC.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. My last question. I appreciate your indulgence, Madam Chair. Okay, and the most important question I have is, so we've had presentations from the University of Minnesota and from MnState, and we know here on the committee that the University of Minnesota asked for $46.5 million. MnState asked for $130 million. And in the governor's budget, he's got a budget item that is the full ask for the U of M, and less than half of the ask for MnState. And can you tell us why that is? Why are you only putting in your budget half of the ask of MnState?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. These budget recommendations were, you know, well thought out by the governor based on requests that were made by the system leaders, both President Gable as well as Chancellor Malhotra and their leadership teams to the governor, much like they come to the legislative committee to also make their budget requests. You know, they made requests to the governor in support of their full funding. You know, and the governor felt that elements of the MnState budget, of course, are critical, both their O&M request as well as their additional equity and affordability provisions. The governor is supporting both, significantly supporting both, and really sees for the MnState piece, the development of the new workforce stabilization program as a way to additionally support Minnesota State, as a majority of those grant recipients will be participants in two-year programs or certificate or diploma programs, or taking advantage of customized training options at MnState institutions. And this aligns with MnState's initial request of a scholarship program development, similarly aligned as well. So we see a majority of the workforce stabilization program being advantaged to the Minnesota State system.
Madam Chair, just a final comment.
Oh, so sorry, I called on you, but I was not, my speaker was not. Representative O'Neill.
The challenge of Zoom. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I would just point out that back again, when I was Vice Chair of Higher Education, we made it very, so we started a shift. We started a dynamic shift where we tried to do parity between the two systems. So we looked at how many students and in each of the systems. And, you know, there's about 68,000 in the MnState system, in the University of Minnesota system. And I don't have the exact number for the FT, you know, the full-time equivalents for the MnState system, but it's more than double, not quite triple, but more than double. So it's curious to me that we are kind of going backwards. So ever since that time, we started to give more to the MnState system, or at least if you look at the students, it was a little bit more fair for what was going to the MnState system. And now we're kind of going backwards again. And so, you know, the entire full ask was $130 million for the MnState system. And when they came and presented, you know, they broke it down and we could all kind of see where they're at. They don't have a lot of options. It's tuition, it's what the state provides, and a little bit of revenue that comes from some of their smaller businesses, like their bookstore and things like that. So they don't have a ton of options. And then of course the grant program. So it's just really disappointing to see the governor's budget come out and again go reverse and give the full ask to the University of Minnesota system and less than half of the ask to the MnState system. So we're going backwards again. And I would encourage us to not do that and to really look at fairly funding both systems and look at the numbers of students in each system. Because like I said, there's more than double in the full-time equivalents in the MnState system. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Howard, and then we have Representative Keeler on deck. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for the presentation. I just have a general comment than a specific question. And just generally speaking, I want to thank you and the governor for their COVID recovery budget and making the values choice to invest in our students and invest in higher education amidst a budget deficit. And I just want to remind members that that hasn't always been the choice that we have made in difficult budget times. In the 2000s, we had difficult budgets and higher education sustained some of the largest cuts. And during that decade, tuition doubled at our public colleges and institutions. And during the Great Recession, we also saw challenging cuts that ended up hurting our students. Broadly speaking, the governor's budget is making the values choice to invest in our students, in our institutions. And it just part of the conversation that to do that requires revenue. And so the values choice is to ask a little bit more for millionaires and billionaires so that we can hold down tuition and make sure that our students have access to a quality higher education. That's a choice I think we should make, and it's the right choice. And so I thank the governor for that. My specific question is about the grant for MICC, and Commissioner, I appreciate you taking the time to connect with me about this individually. This had previously has been an appropriation to a school, MICC, that from my perspective is doing unbelievable work to help prepare students with learning differences for success in the real world. And really what they offer students is unparalleled. So I guess my question is, by going this competitive grant model, have you heard of other institutions that are seeking state funds to provide education or training for students with learning differences?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Howard. And before I answer that, just thank you for your words about the governor's budget. Completely agree and appreciate your support. Representative, to answer your question, yes, I will agree 100% that MICC has been doing some incredible work in serving the students that they serve. We know that there are others across the state as well that have interest in serving students with autism as well, and haven't had the opportunity to participate in state funding streams to be able to do so. And yeah, we have received outreach as well as been in communication with others.
Representative Howard, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, yes, just a quick thank you, Commissioner. And given that information, I guess what I would encourage you, Commissioner, and encourage the governor is, you know, we're hopefully getting a good, better news with an economic forecast soon, and to consider increasing the support in this program. If there are other programs throughout the state that are providing new opportunities for students on the autism spectrum, we should take that opportunity. But under the current model, we essentially, if more entities are taking up that pie, this would essentially be a cut to MICC. And, you know, cutting students that, it should be no surprise that it's been a tough year for students at MICC and students on the autism spectrum. And I really think in this environment, we shouldn't be going that direction. And so hopefully there's a stronger forecast and some opportunity, you know, to lift all boats, so to speak, with the supplemental budget. Thanks.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Olson, me and you spent a lot of time talking about a lot of this, but I have a couple questions. One is, I'm actually going to piggyback on what Representative Howard just mentioned. MICC is one of the only organizations in the nation to do what they do. So to give up their funding to say we have other organizations that want to try to start to do services rather than partnering with a nationally recognized organization to maybe find some offshoots or off programming across greater Minnesota, I would just encourage us to maybe look at those possibilities. Starting up a new organization or school or support is a lot of work. And if I heard you right, you said that it's that there's people who have presented interest in starting new programs. I just think that also, you know, we look at education as an investment. And one of the things that I learned while I was talking with them is the way that their system works is like a high 90% of their students end up working right here in our state. They don't get their degree and then leave. And so really the investment is like $38 on the dollar of an investment. So when we think about it and what the long-term benefit of supporting an organization in a school like that, I just would like us to look through that a little bit more. But I do want to ask a question about the direct admission criteria piece. And we talked about this a little bit, but just publicly, I really am not a fan of the ACT or SAT. We know historically that was a test that was created to find a divide. And historically, if people don't know, the test was established to understand the difference between our white population and our Jewish population. So there's been a cultural divide in this test for a very long time. It's also a privilege. If you look at ACT, SAT prep, I mean, families have to come up with $300 to $400 weekend time to be able to go and do that. And so it really is creating a privileged situation. And so I would really encourage us to look at how that criteria plays a role into whether a student is eligible to enter into a two-year university or two-year college or a four-year university. But also, now my question is around, you mentioned GPA might be an indicator. What are we doing with the schools who in the pandemic have moved to a pass-fail guideline? Because that is kind of one of the things that a lot of schools are talking about, that's going to affect the way that the GPA outcome looks. I just want to make sure we're looking at this from an equity lens, that all students are eligible for the opportunity to bridge into higher ed.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Keeler. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to look at multiple measures for development of this program, and that's going to be the whole point of the first year in really standing up the pilot, is to establish those benchmarks and those thresholds. You know, I don't want to lose the important piece that, you know, all the students, all graduating seniors are going to get at least a signal that they have been admitted into all of our open access institutions in the state. For the University of Minnesota, for some of the University of Minnesota campuses, or for some specific programs and colleges in our four-year state universities, there may be some additional criteria, and that could be a combination of GPA, of class rank, of rigorous courses that have been taken, AP, IB, concurrent enrollment, what have you, other demonstrated ways, including ACT, SAT scores. But, you know, I completely hear you in that there has been some inequitable distribution of access to those tests and preparation for those tests. And it's why I think we see a lot of colleges and universities, not only here in Minnesota, but across the nation, looking at test optional opportunities and looking at new ways and multiple measures to be able to admit students into specific programs. And so I 100% hear your concern, and we'll make sure that that is front and center of the discussions that we have with our independent school district leaders, our partners at Department of Education, as well as those within our institutions that'll help us develop the criteria for the direct admissions piece, particularly for University of Minnesota and for some of our selective private institutions. And then, Madam Chair and Representative Keeler, if I may, just a brief comment on the MICC concerns you share with Representative Howard. Again, I completely agree. I do just want to clarify, you know, those that we have heard from that are interested in participating in competitive funding, should it be available, whether at the current appropriation level or an increased appropriation level, if that's, you know, what the committee decides. These aren't necessarily folks that are interested in startups or new programs. These are longstanding institutions in Minnesota, like ARC Minnesota, like some of the programs affiliated with the Pacer Center, programs affiliated with, you know, Autism Society of Minnesota, other E12 institutions. And so, you know, I guess I was mistaken by saying they were potentially new programs. I was referring to new interests necessarily, not new startup programs. So just wanted to clarify that. And I do see as well Ms. Oliver's hand up again. I know she has been in close conversation with some of these programs. May want to offer more, Madam Chair, if you would entertain that.
Ms. Oliver.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Keeler. I do want to add to the comments about Direct Admissions Minnesota. This is not, and to Representative O'Neill's point about we have something through PSEO, not all students access PSEO, and there are barriers to PSEO as well, but this initiative is more to close information gaps and to target those most underrepresented students and essentially give them a nudge to say, hey, you can go, you meet the standards. And to add to what the commissioner also said, the bulk of this funding would be in the first year in us making, in planning with our with our, in collaboration with stakeholders, K-12 school districts in higher education, and they would have to agree to a set benchmark for eligibility. So the whole purpose and intent behind this program is equity. So I just wanted to make that comment. And Madam Chair and Representative Keeler, to your comment about MICC, and I'm glad the commissioner clarified, but some of the needs of these other organizations that do serve individuals going to college are kind of minimal. It's like if we had additional staff, like one or two other staff people, we can provide an abundance of services to more individuals experiencing autism. And being a competitive grant, we can tie in what you said, Representative Keeler, the need to partner with other organizations for expansion. So I just wanted to make those two comments and thank you, Chair.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying, Commissioner Olson, that they're not startup programs, that they're just expansion of interest. So my last question and the only concern that I have, I want to say I really appreciate the direct admit conversation. I do think that more students will find a path to higher ed. The higher ed recruiting person in me is wondering, if we compare to the other state that did it, we could roughly have like 4,000 new students in higher ed. My brain goes to, every time a student applies, there's usually an application fee, anywhere from $30 to $40. Like, where in this equation are we accounting for the fact that that's almost $120,000 lost in application fees for this transition? Is that part of the budget, and is that what we're planning on covering? Because I know that in a world where higher ed institutions are really struggling financially, to take that away from them is just going to create a bigger issue.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Keeler. It certainly could be part of the conversation. It's not included in the budget right now, but we do know we get a lot of applicants in Minnesota during College Knowledge Month, or when application fees are waived. As well as, you know, any student experiencing a hardship, which Ms. Oliver had mentioned, you know, this does have a significant equity focus. Those application fees are typically waived by our colleges and universities anyway, or they can apply to have them waived. This is an opportunity, I think, to couple a lot of additional new programs together too, you know, things that we've been in discussions about for a long time, like a uniform financial aid letter and, you know, other signals to students that they don't have to have extensive college going knowledge to be able to navigate at least the application and admission process. And so any way that we can ease that transition, remove some of those barriers for our students who give up before even taking an opportunity to apply or hear that they're eligible, we're willing to do that. And so this could be a combination of some other initiatives as well.
Representative Keeler, do you have a follow-up?
No, that's it. Thank you. I do really like a lot of the things that we're outlining here. I just wanted to get some things on the record asking some of those questions. Thank you.
We have Representative O'Neill next, and then we have Representative Albright on deck. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was just looking through my notes, and it seems to me, as in my notes, it says 900,000 of the 1 million is actually for a working group. So that just seems like an awful lot of money just to kind of figure out this direct admissions program. That's not exactly what you had said in the presentation. Are my briefing notes, or is that correct? That's 900,000 of the 1 million to just set up a working group to figure out how to do direct admissions. I mean, Minnesota should understand that if you graduated from a high school in Minnesota, you already can get into a Minn-State school. You just have to apply. And as you just said, those application fees can be waived if need be. So I'm not exactly sure what we're trying to accomplish here. I think if anything, maybe our high school counselors could need a little help to get people to think about it, but I'm not exactly sure what you're accomplishing here. But am I correct? Are my notes right that out of the 1,900,000 is just for a working group to figure out how to do this?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. The working group is a portion of the year one funding that is necessary. There's also going to be a lot of technology needs that need to be stood up in that first year as well to be able to implement the program ongoing. We know that there's going to be a lot of data sharing agreements that need to be developed, as well as a potentially implementation of a new system, sending out hundreds of thousands of letters or even, you know, electronic distribution and dissemination of that information, you know, needs to be developed. And so it, part of it is a working group and a pilot with 10 public school districts and our higher ed institutions all aligning. That's a part of it, but ongoing, it's a $75,000 appropriation.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
So you, is it $900,000 for the working group, or is it a million? I mean, I guess I'm not clear. That's what my notes say it is. Okay, so it is $900,000 for a working group to figure out how to do this. And it seems like you're just talking about sending a letter or an email or a text or a phone call or something to graduating seniors to say, hey, you should think about going to a Mid States system school and here's what you do. It just seems like something that they should already be doing in high school already. I don't really understand the point of this. So thank you anyway.
Commissioner Olson, I saw that you were communicating with your head there. Did you have something else that you would like to add? And I see Ms. Oliver has her hand up as well. Is there information you'd like to share?
Yep, Madam Chair, and to Representative O'Neill's question, it is a $1 million appropriation request over the biennium, front-loaded in that first year. It's actually $925,000 to develop, yes, as part of it, the working group, but a lot of IT infrastructure too. But I do agree that, you know, this is going to be and needs to be a partnership with public school districts, and whether that is a partnership with additional counseling services that may be appropriated through E12 committees, it certainly has to be. You know, we do all we can during College Knowledge Month and events to get information out to students, but, you know, it's clear not every student gets the same opportunity and information. And yeah, they can be admitted. They do have the opportunity, but to be able to offer signals to all of our graduating seniors in Minnesota year after year is an important endeavor. The governor feels we should be developing and standing up.
Ms. Oliver, did you have something to add?
I forget, am I unmuted?
Yes.
Okay, so I apologize if you heard me cuss, my computer froze, and I didn't know I was unmuted, so I apologize for that, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of talk about a few points regarding why this is needed. Sorry, losing my bullet points here. Oh no. Sorry. Okay. I apologize. Our current like participation rates range from 38% for American Indian students to 70% for white students. So there's a significant gap in college participation. And there's a similar gap, I think about 23% seen between students eligible for free and reduced price meals. And while we do have open access schools in the state, not all students are getting the same information and aren't getting the same encouragement to go. And I know there's other pathways. We understand we don't want to just be college focused, but we know there's significant gaps in just college attendance overall as well for those most underrepresented. And it would be great if we were doing a better job with those students, but right now it's not happening. And this is a possible solution or strategy for that. I just wanted to make kind of that point. And we can provide more detail when the budget bill is up about kind of how that 925 is being allocated. And like the commissioner already mentioned, it's not just for the working group. It's primarily IT and it's support to the school districts that are participating. So not our agency necessarily for establishing a working group, but the K-12 individuals and school districts that are going to be participating in this work and the outreach that's going to have to happen and the communication. And yes, I know it sounds simplistic when we say it's a document, a piece of paper going to students, but it's a lot more complicated just to do that, especially on the K-12 side. So I just wanted to kind of make note that this is a strategy among many to kind of support some equity initiatives in not just by race and ethnicity, but also low income. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members on both sides, and to you, Commissioner Olson, what I think you've heard is that there are bipartisan concerns about the budget that this administration has put forward. Notwithstanding the funding proposals for both the MNSCU and the University of Minnesota, I hear over and over again from yourself and others that we're looking for mission alignment. And I want to pick up on a couple of points that several of the members have already keyed up on, because I think they send a message. You know, when you talk about competitive funding for other entities that want to provide services to the parents and folks on the spectrum in the autism community. When you talk about realigning and moving the funding, looking for a new home for it, if you will, for those folks that are suffering from traumatic brain injury or spinal cord injury. When you're an aspiring farmer who wants to go back into the community and serve as a veterinarian, but you can't, you don't have the wherewithal to cover it. And that's a foundational element of our state is agriculture. When you start talking about the notion that we have to go about aligning these programs, mission alignment, but in the same sense, as I heard Representative Howard say, well, if an additional revenue is necessary, then well, by golly, we'll just go after the millionaires and billionaires because they're not paying their fair share. That sends a message. It sends a message that we're maligning success. It sends a message that we're maligning the people that you are saying we need to raise revenue from that pay their taxes, they create their jobs for their community. They are philanthropic beyond most of our wildest dreams in anonymous ways that will never seek recognition. They are the foundational elements for community development and anchor the safety and the preservation of communities. But yet you're talking about aligning your mission and cutting $12.2 million for people that are clinging to hope, that all they're looking for is someone that aligns their mission with the mission of the state. Commissioner Olson, we are talking about some folks that want to get ahead in their career path, that want to serve their communities, or candidly are in the shadows of life, and we are not looking out for them. So, Commissioner Olson, I will leave you with this. I don't think the governor has finished his homework. Send that message back to him.
There we go. Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions before we have Commissioner Olson wrap up his comments here and move on to the next testifier? Okay, I do not see anyone raising their hands. Commissioner Olson, would you like to make some closing remarks?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee once again for the opportunity to address you today and share the governor's budget recommendations. I do know there are some difficult pieces in this budget, some difficult decisions that were made. I look forward to working with the entire committee, all the members of the committee, to potentially improve and address some of those concerns that were shared today. But I will say there are a lot of really exciting pieces, new programs and investments that are really tailored to a COVID-19 recovery, particularly for our most impacted Minnesotans, our students that have struggled through this the most, our working adults, our student parents, our students of color. We feel as though these programs and budget proposals are well aligned to addressing Minnesota's economic recovery. And so I look forward to continuing to working with the committee, particularly when language comes out with more information on the budget items and pieces we can work together on. So thank you, Madam Chair and members, once again.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson and Ms. Oliver for testifying today, and we appreciate your efforts and commitments to Minnesota and our students and helping them achieve their dreams and get through these challenging times. So we thank you and your staff for your effort. Thank you for being here today. Now with us today, we have a person signed up for a public testimony on the governor's budget recommendations. We have Mr. Matthew Roderick, the Executive Director of Unite to Fight Paralysis. Mr. Roderick, welcome to our committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I appreciate the opportunity to address you today. My name is Matthew Roderick. I'm the Executive Director of Unite to Fight Paralysis. More importantly, I'm father to a son with a spinal cord injury 12 years ago, quadriplegic injury to be specific. Which is what leads me to talk to you and what has led me to the work that I do. I also will let you know, and I'm not going to reiterate, many of you have received correspondences from me, and I did send a packet as well. I'm not going to be redundant, but I do want to remind members that I'm one of the original architects of this SCI TBI research grant program. After years of advocacy, both at the legislature and across the country around this issue of spinal cord injury in particular. And today I'm speaking on behalf of my community of about 11,000 people in the state of Minnesota with a spinal cord injury and many more with traumatic brain injury, but that's really not the community I'm here to speak on behalf of, though we are linked and support together. I just don't want to speak on behalf of folks at TBI that I have less knowledge of. I want to address, and Commissioner Olson, thank you for your introduction and comments. I do want to address just a few key things in response to the governor's budget. One of them, first and foremost, is this question of mission alignment and 100% mission. Frankly, I'm a supporter of much of what I've heard, but I think from a conceptual framework, I'm not sure I see 100% mission alignment in anything that was just discussed. And I want to point out to the members of the committee that our program is a very targeted way that this mission is aligned. Many students, both at the undergrad level and graduate level, medical students, residents, postdoctoral students have been the recipients of this funding program that is working wonderfully. And I don't think there's anyone on the committee that would disagree. It's been a very successful program. Secondly, so I do see it as mission aligned in the sense that it is serving again, a very targeted area of education. But in terms of that value assessment or that values choice, you're getting an additional piece. And that additional piece is the reason why this program works is that people who are most affected by these injuries are actually working collaboratively together with, and this is another point I wanted to address from Commissioner Olson about a lack of expertise at the Office of Higher Education to do this kind of work. We actually have harnessed the experts in the state of Minnesota to prioritize and fund the kind of research projects that this program is funding. And that is also why it's working. You have the expertise of people who live in close proximity to the injury, sitting at the same table with research scientists and clinicians in every sort of strategy, scientific strategy, putting their heads together and coming up with a very programmatic program. So it's not just a pot of money, it's actually an appropriation that is developing a momentum in this field of spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury within the state of Minnesota that I'll also have you know, many of you might not, that has gained recognition around the planet, the globe, for what has been invested in Minnesota in just 5 short years because we have advanced therapeutics for both traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injury in a quite a short time, which is astonishing. I think in many ways, better than any of us had expected. And that kind of value choice actually hits some of the things that Commissioner Olson mentioned about access to completing post-secondary education and beyond, I would add. Rebuilding a future also taps into that. And particularly the one in the governor's budget of retaining world-class faculty at the University of Minnesota and other institutions. That's actually what this program is doing. So it is mission aligned and it sort of checks the box of those value choices that have been discussed. And so I really, really wanted to emphasize those points. And then lastly, I wanted to address some of the questions that Commissioner Olson raised in response to, I believe, Representative Erickson. I hope I got the name right, that there are questions about working with this program. I mean, no one has reached out to us from the community to discuss options for how or where this could be housed. But the very reason why we came to you all in the first place is because across the United States, and actually very much across the world, industry drives this kind of research. And the only check that we can have on that, at the academic level, industry drives academic research. There's not much industry interest at this point, even though the advances are being made in this field, because we are a small market population. We're not a very lucrative and attractive population for a pharmacologic or a biologic or a device. So we come to the people's house and say, we're as Representative Albright mentioned, we're a population that is often in the shadows and sometimes forgotten. And so we need a check on that driver in the market that's not paying attention to us. And we have done that, and you all have done that by supporting this program. And so I would implore you to rethink, I implore the governor to rethink that decision for such a small slice of a very large budget to look at how much mission alignment there is and what the impact and power of the value choice that's being applied to defunding this program or maintaining it at a time when it is actually picking up speed, momentum, and notice. And then one last thing, and I'm done. We have used the Minnesota bill as kind of a gold standard to, in the last 5 years, pass a bill in Washington State, Ohio, Pennsylvania, have introduced a bill in Wisconsin, and we hope to introduce 2 more bills in Texas and Colorado. The reason why we've been successful, and particularly Ohio and Pennsylvania, is those bills are almost verbatim modeled after what we did here in Minnesota. And they are beginning to fund in a very programmatic way like we've done in Minnesota. And then the beauty of that is that we have also facilitated some of the first meetings between Minnesota, Ohio, and Pennsylvania to collaborate and amplify the dollars. Because this is a field that's growing in momentum and impact for our communities. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I just wanted to hit a few of those points, which I hope weren't redundant from some of the material I've sent you, but I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Roderick, for your public testimony and for sharing your experience with us today. We appreciate that. Members, we have concluded our agenda. And I want to thank you and everyone who's been listening today. And we will see you next Tuesday at our hearing. Thank you so much. Oh, I do see a question and people, and I didn't adjourn the meeting. And I see people have gotten off, but since I haven't adjourned and I did see a question, I didn't see one previously. Representative Meckland, excuse me, did you have a question?
I actually, thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to thank Matthew for his testimony because I think it's very, very important. And unfortunately, internet out here is a little bit sketchy, but I did put it up sooner. It just didn't, it took a while. But I want to thank Matthew for his testimony, and I think he was spot on. That's all I have to say.
And I see Representative Cleavorn has her hand up as well. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And I, too, want to thank Mr. Roderick. I know his son and have worked with him on other legislation as well. So I just want to thank them both for their tenacity, for bringing the good work. And he's absolutely correct. Oftentimes, it starts in one state, it moves to multiple states, and then it becomes a national program. So I just want to say thank you for your time, for sharing your story, and it is really an important program. So thank you.
Thank you. It looks like we have had a chance to get all members' questions answered, and I'm glad we were able to catch those before we ended here today. So see you next week, and the meeting is adjourned.